Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
Trayvon Benjamin Martin, born February 5th, 1995, perished February 26, 2012. Emmett Lewis Till, born July 25th, 1941, perished August 28th, 1955. Oscar Julius Grant III, born February 27, 1986, perished January 1, 2009. These young men are a part of a hideous history of violence against people of color. Children in our communities murdered because they were African American. This nation, this diverse nation of ours, harbors tales of mass lynching, cross-burning, assassinations of prolific leaders slain in the prime of their lives. Today, A Touch of Grace pauses to reflect on the lives lost at the hands of predators against equal rights for all. The injustice behind these deaths is a potent reminder of where we've been and where we are today. Our judicial system seems a breeding ground for racists who walk among us each day, hating who we are, despising us for not being white. Our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents lived during a time where water fountains and bathrooms were marked colored and white, as if we were beneath them to even use the same facilities as them, as if our blackness would rub off of us and onto them in swimming pools. This is why we must utilize education to understand the laws of this land, why we must be smarter than the laws that are used as scapegoats by the cowardice races who hides behind them. These three young men will never know a future because they were slaughtered and will never see it unfold, never see who they could be. Each of these senseless murders should serve as a catalyst that forces us to rise and be part of the solution as opposed to the problem. Behind a prison wall, we can do nothing. So let us be better than that. Listen. I am your host, GD. Welcome to iArtist on A Touch of Grace. Today's guest has not joined just yet. He's actually messaging me to let me know that he's calling in. So I want to thank you guys for tuning in today. This is a great day in history. This is a great day of us to live in the truth of the people that we stand upon the shoulders of, the people who faced adversity every which way and looked around, but they survived, a lot of them, so that freedoms that were not afforded them back then were afforded them now. H.D. Campbell has over 25 years of writing experience, with credits in freelance newspaper reporting, personal fiction, and poetry. He has authored numerous books with themes of romance, espionage, and mystery. During college, he co-founded the St. Louis Creative Black Writers Guild with LaShonda Hoffman that lasted 5 years. It was an organization where writers thrived in all aspects of creativity. His latest book, entitled Geraldine, is a sequel to one he published back in the year 2000, entitled How to Lose a Black Woman. He joins us today to discuss his creative endeavors as well as his literary journeys. I am honored to introduce you to H.D. Campbell. H.D., how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm wonderful. Nervous but wonderful.
Nervous but wonderful. Well, you know what? A friend of mine told me that nerves are just butterflies. We just got to make sure they fly in the right formation.
Man, I totally agree.
Well, I want to thank you for joining A Touch of Grace. And I just did a reflection on the murders of three young men in history, Oscar Grant, Emmett Lewis Till, and then Trayvon, to remind us about our black history and why we need to take advantage of all the opportunities afforded us by the people in history who have become symbol of courage. So with that, I want you to give us a quick summary of where life began for you and when you discovered that you had been blessed with the gift of writing?
Well, that started when I was, honestly, it started when I was 10. I've always had kind of a vivid imagination, but nowhere no direction to flow it in. Well, when I was 10 years old, I really had nothing to do in class at the time, so I actually wrote a Black History poem just to impress my teacher with. She saw it, and I don't know if a lot of people back in the day remember Ebony Jr. They had a magazine called, it was like a, you know, junior version of Ebony Magazine. It got published in it. And from then on, I decided to just, well, maybe I can just start writing. So I started writing stories and poetry, and it evolved into what you have today.
Yeah, I remember Ebony Jr. I had forgotten all about that until you brought it up. I'm going to have to do some searching around because I remember that. So you were 10 years old when you had your first published works. So what did that feel like for you at the time?
Well, it was very overwhelming because I've been trying for years. I've written many books. I had so many books out there that I was trying to get published. Because to be honest with you, my espionage books were the ones I was supposed to get published first. But my romance is the one that actually did get published, so I decided to just go on with that. And like I said, it's very overwhelming, but, you know, I rolled with it.
Yeah, at 10 years old, I think that's quite remarkable. So let's talk about your early life. What was life like for you during the early years? Where were you born?
I was born in St. Louis, Missouri.
Okay. So what was life like for the young H.D. Campbell living in St. Louis?
It was a lot of fun. I'm always bragging about the old school because I was bragging as far as the kids nowadays got their iPods and all that other stuff. We played outside. I mean, it was a pretty cool childhood. I can't complain. I had a lot of friends. I just say it was just pretty normal. In other words, in the sea of normalcy, I was the most awkward kid there was.
Amen.
About me, but I was the awkward one. So.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I was the most creative in my family. I come from a family of very creative people, and so I can definitely understand, you know, being the awkward one. So being the awkward one, how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have one older brother.
There was only two of them?
Yes. I think he's about 44, I think, now.
Wow. So did you guys grow up together?
We were very close, so, you know, we played together, we fought together, we were...
All of the above.
Exactly. And we're still the same way like that today.
Well, I think the family is, it's a gift from God, you know, and it's great that, you know, since we get older, we learn to appreciate them more. I certainly appreciate my brother Vance and my sister Lisa. You know, Lord knows we're different, but I have just really grown to love them these days. So let's talk about your writing, okay, because this is what you are. You are a writer. This is a gift that God gave to you. How powerful do you feel when you write, and what do you think is behind that passion?
I love telling stories. I love manipulating characters. I usually say this for my mystery novels as well as my espionage novels, but I say it for all my novels. I like to create conflict just so it can be resolved.
Uh-huh.
You know, and nobody. And,
No, go ahead.
No, I mean that's me. I love creating conflict just so it can be resolved. I just love to put my characters in situations and have them figure out what to do. Okay. On top of that,
well, that's
just people will just love.
Okay, well, let's talk about that very first book, the title, "How to Lose a Black Woman." What is that book about?
The book is about a school teacher. He's looking for love. And I don't know if a lot of people remember this, but there were like phone dating services back in the 90s.
Oh yeah, I remember those.
Exactly. He wanted to look for love. So he decided to go through that. And this man is a rarity. He's a virgin. He really is looking for his soulmate. I mean, he's a Catholic school teacher. He basically is looking for his soulmate. So he goes through the motions. He goes through all these bad women with. A lot of these women are based on women that I tried to talk to off the service, just I'm telling on myself. True love. But in trying to find his true love, he makes mistakes along the way, which sort of takes him off of his journey. Now, I want to put throughout the book that this man, there is also poetry in this book, original poetry by me. Well, basically it's his poetry, but it's basic poetry written by me throughout the book that he wrote, documenting his journey as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in The High Rules of Black Women, that was a last minute title because it's pretty much so as a play of words to where mistakes can help you lose your ideal mate, which he actually almost made those mistakes in order to lose his queen, his soulmate. So you can just replace black woman with this. You can replace black woman with this any. You can replace black woman with this anything.
And so I think it's great to write about relationships, and I do like the position that you take. You know, within the pages of your book, there is resolve, you know, and so they almost come off as being like help books for people that are in relationships. And so when you completed that very first novel, what feeling stirred in you when you held that finished product in your hand?
Again, for me, it was more of an overwhelming thing because I finished a story that I could be proud of, and it was a story for me that because I was married at the time,
mm-hmm.
and it was the fact that my wife could read this book, and because this wasn't a true story about me and her, but it could have been our story. And so in finishing that, number one, solidifies my love for her as well as it solidifies the fact that I finished a good story anyone can read because I made that first book Christian-based. Anybody can read that.
And so the question that I have then, because it sounds to me like even though it is a fictional book, you know, it was almost like a journal for you as well because of your relationship. So were you and your wife together when the book released, or what were you guys already separated at that time?
Well, we were together when the book was released. My wife passed some years ago, so.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, no, it's fine. But, we were together when that book was released. She truly loved that book. She was one of my biggest cheerleaders in the beginning for that book. Before I started marketing with all you guys, I mean, it was like she was the first out there pushing it for me.
And so it's a great thing that she got an opportunity to see it released before she parted. And so post your wife being with you, you just kept on going. So with that hurt that you were experiencing, how did you continue? Was it just an automatic thing that you just kept on? What were your thoughts during that time? How did you find the inspiration to keep on going?
Well, before I answer that, I do want to say that before she passed, I was able to publish three more books before she passed. Yeah, I was able to pass, but I didn't make sure I'm telling four three more books after that before she passed. So I passed knowing that she was proud of me. And the fact that everything I do from this point on will be in her memory, as well as in the heart of our son.
And so the question that I have, I'd like to know is, do you feel that writing this book helped the relationship while it was still in progress? Do you think that as a result of that, you know, it added a more diverse dynamic that made it be more successful?
You know, I really didn't think about that when I was writing, but what I was thinking about was, man, it's like relationships are such no-brainers if you actually do them right. And not to sound like I have all the answers, but more like it's just basic things we need to do for one another, for each other, as well as for ourselves in order to be right for our mates. So I was thinking more on that term when I was putting it together. Then I was also thinking, man, a lot of brothers going to hate me once this book comes out.
I could just see the torches and people coming after you, but I certainly admire your courage to go ahead and put it out there, because those make some of the most compelling books when they are real and they're not weighted down. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, I don't mean to cut you off. I do want to say this, though. I do want to say this. At first, I thought a lot of brothers were going to be upset with me, but I get a lot of brothers reading this book. I have a lot of, a few years after the book got published, I got a request from prison who wanted this book. And it's just amazing that it just received good reviews for men and women.
So I didn't mean to cut you off. So at first you were thinking one way, and then it actually boomeranged to where it actually had a positive, you know, feedback from other people. And what sorts of feedback were you receiving from people, particularly the person that was in prison?
Well, like places like, from Amazon, I was getting people from on the street who read my book. I would have people call me and say, I get that your book from Barnes & Noble. And I'm thinking, I'm like, I didn't know Barnes & Noble if they had my book.
So yeah. Your literary reach exceeded even what you knew at the time, I suppose. But yeah,
exactly.
So now the current release out now is a sequel. And before we move on, were you finished with your thought? I don't want to miss over anything.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So you have the first one, and now your current release is called Geraldine. So if the first one was about, you know, looking for love, online or on the phone, what is Geraldine about?
Okay, first, before I go into Geraldine, the main character in Hollywood Black Woman named Bruce Williams. Bruce Williams is the guy that was looking for love. Geraldine was in Hollywood Black Woman. Geraldine is was a hairdresser in the book. She was one of his potentials, but have you ever been with someone, wanted to talk to someone, but then you realize you're better friends than anything? Well, that's how,
I agree. Yeah.
So that's how him and Geraldine were. So they became really tight. Well, I decided to give Geraldine her own book. Now, but when I decided to do Geraldine, I decided, okay, we got too many books for the hairdresser as the main character. So I decided to expand her character. I first made her a widow, because I've been threatening to make her give her own book for years.
Uh-huh.
I decided to expand on the character. She's a widow, and she's a business owner. So when her husband died, she bought up all this property on one block. She not only runs a hair salon, she also runs a convenience store, apartments above. She runs a small bookstore. She's an entrepreneur. Basically, Geraldine's conflict is All right, it's been several years since her husband passed. She's ready to date. So she ends up meeting two men. Now, without going into too much, without getting too much into, she meets two men. She meets a young attorney. She's 40, by the way. She meets a young 20-something-year-old attorney who basically is handling her case at the moment as far as her business case. And she also meets an older retired gentleman. Geraldine's issue is she's got the best of both worlds with both men. The retired gentleman is somebody she can take care of because she's used to taking care of her husband. She used to take care of her, of the man that she's with. But this young man, he's fun. Even though he has an older heart, he's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of torn. Now, when what readers of the book are going to have to do is follow Geraldine and realize one of these men she wants to be with, but one of these men she needs to be with. There's a difference. Now, another part of the book, and this is, again, people are going to hate me. I continue to incorporate in this book, but unlike Geraldine, he's a minor character. I'm continuing his story, but there's going to be a cliffhanger. Geraldine's story is going to be finished in this book, but I'm going to leave you with a cliffhanger with Bruce's story, which is going to lead into a third book where I'm going to bring Bruce back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically Geraldine. Oh, in addition to Geraldine's crazy friends and
yeah, the dynamic of making it real with the friendships and probably what she's telling them and the advice that they're giving her. I think it's just amazing. So you continue the story. And so the question I have for you as an author myself, because I wrote the Ripped and Ready series, and the difficulties were remembering things like, okay, what I said in the first book, am I being true to the solid storyline? So how do you conquer keeping up with the time sequences and the ages? And is there a trick that you do when you are writing a sequel, or as you get ready to go into another one? You said the Geraldine story is going to be finished. How do you combat that?
What I do is I go back and I read my first, and I try to take, well, I actually skim through it. And I try to take as many notes as I can, because one thing, I'm a very big stickler for consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot more easier to do with my romance novels than my other two, because my other two, I have bigger conflicts with them. I have to be sure that I just have to be sure I'm being true to the character in the first book, because if you're not true to the character, you know, it could be something as simple as Bruce Williams having a scar under his eye in one book and
right.
Perfect. Stuff like that, you really have to be consistent with.
Yeah, that's why. Because sometimes I'll go back and I'll look at mine. I actually read my fifth one all the way from cover to cover, and I actually saw the growth as far as writing is concerned. So definitely you pay attention to detail, which is something as a writer we all have to do, because readers will catch on to everything. But how about the momentum, you know, of a storyline? Is it something that captures you and so that allows you to be able to have the energy? Because one thing that I realized is that when I was writing those three books, that I kind of got tired of the characters. Is there ever a tendency for that to happen with you?
Let me say it one more time. I'm kidding you. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Getting kind of bored with the storyline, because, like, you have the first book, How to Lose a Black Woman. Then you have the second book, Geraldine. So how do you keep it fresh and interesting enough for you to actually be able to continue writing that particular storyline?
What I try to do is, I think this may sound weird, but I'm being very serious with it. I don't tell the story. I mean, to be honest with you, I let my characters drive. I let my characters dictate my story. So what I'll do is, I can have a plan going, and something just won't, because I feel if something don't fit right with me, it don't fit right with the readers either. So my characters, a.k.a. our imaginary friends, I always feel that our characters are our imaginary friends.
Right.
I'm something, and the character may want to go another way. So I go the way the character wants to go. And then and then I let that play out. 9 times out of 10, I never had a situation where it didn't work. Because then once I do that, I can build upon other things.
Uh-huh.
So I read it back and I say, man, that is so much better than where I was going with it.
Uh-huh. Because so would you say it's like a spiritual intervention, or
yes.
What is it feeling like?
Oh, man, it feels good because, see, I personally feel, I feel we as authors should understand that if we're not happy or we don't feel right about what we put on this paper, then our readers can't be happy with it.
Right.
So we have to assume that, you know, because if I have a problem reading what I wrote, then I can't put it out. I will actually put back a deadline. I mean, I will push back a deadline just so I can make sure this is the way I want it to be.
So question, can you tell your growth, because I mentioned that a little earlier, when you read your first novel versus your current novel, can you see your growth as a writer in them?
Yes. Yes, even though I don't always recognize it, yes. I can definitely see that.
And so how does that make you – does it make you feel like pulling the first book, or do you just kind of roll with it?
I kind of roll with it. I'm still pleased with my books when I do to people. It's just more of a thing of, wow. But see, it's like, wow. I really do see my growth, but then I'm also the type of person, I like to outdo myself. So in other words, I want to make each book better than the last one I did.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. Now, well, this is a question I have for you, because you mentioned it, you know, the different types of genres you write. So how challenging is it shifting between genres? Like, you'll write a romance novel, and then you said you write about espionage, which is definitely detail-oriented, and then you also have the third one, romance. So how difficult is it jumping between the genres, and is there one that is more difficult to write as opposed to the other?
I think even though I started writing this, I think my espionage thriller is the most, difficult's not a good word, I would say the most challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I was a kid, I was always a fan of espionage because of the fact that I love international, this is going to sound very strange, but I love international terrorism. And one thing that I tried to teach people for years is, number one, that all international terrorists are from the Middle East. A lot of these guys operate like they're organized crime units.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're from all over the world. The most difficult thing I have to do is come up with a very big, challenging plot. Like in the first book, I stole a nuclear warhead and smuggled it into Paris. What makes my books interesting is not even that. The name of my espionage thriller is called the Sergeant Wildcat Chronicles series, there's a military strategist that he's a federal agent, ex-military strategist, who works in a small division of Homeland Security. He works in a small clandestine unit with a bunch of other, where Navy SEALs and other things. But what makes his character interesting is, and he's a young African American male. All my main characters are African American. He's very sarcastic.
Okay.
Yeah, he journals everything, including his mission. And I tell people it's like he's the just picture a more laid back, unstuck up version of James Bond, basically, because you know you got stuck up James Bond, you got this young cat who listens to Luther Vandross on his Valentine.
Luther Vandross in the military. All right,
We'll see. I love characters. Like I said, this show, Dan, you know, he's a federal agent, does all this stuff. He lives in a studio apartment, watches cartoons, hardly ever drinks. But yet, he's the world's top strategist. And he's able to go in, like I say, the first book, I stole a nuclear warhead and smuggled it into Paris. And in the second book, I recreated a very deadly plague that unleashed it upon the East Coast. In a dirty bomb.
Wow.
And these are the things that he has to deal with.
Wow. So he has to deal with them as far as locate the people and find out where it's coming from and be one step ahead. Or is he the one doing it?
he's the agent. He works for a small group. I made up. Government is a privately owned, is a privately government funded operation, and he has to lead a team of ex Navy SEALs, ex marksmen. There's about four or five of them. Now the woman he worked for has all types of agents, but she needed a group of agents she can trust because half these guys can't trust. But they needed a head, so they called him in. They called him in to be the head of this unit. The guys that she would put her that. She needs a group she can put her life on the line for, as well as them put theirs on for her. Now, the group I created, so far he's fought this group consistently in two books. He's going to have a new enemy in the third book. The leader of this group is a KGB agent who went to Togo. Because I started the first book when the Soviet Union failed in the 90s. So I followed that very carefully, so that's when I stole a new forehead during that conflict. But the guy being an ex-KGB agent, he lost his job, so he takes his money and starts an international terrorist unit filled with people from all over the world, including people from everybody from Uganda to New York to Russia to Germany. He's got an entire organization of criminals that works for him.
So the question I have, I tell you, it's intriguing. And I don't know if you know it. Like when we were talking about Geraldine and we were talking about how to lose a black woman, there's a different type of pacing in your voice, and I don't know if you pick it up yet. It almost seems to me you really lit up when you start talking about this genre of writing. So this genre of writing certainly is very detailed. I mean, the book is called The War Hawk Biological Threat, A Sergeant Wise Guy Chronicle, and then you have the Sergeant Wise Guy Chronicles. What intrigues you so much that you are willing to commit to that much detail? What is it in you that drives that?
For some reason, I just love stopping the bad guys. I love creating these big detailed plots just so they can be taken down. But I want to say this real fast about my Sergeant Wise Guy. To those who are asking first, as a kid, I was writing at first. I was writing short stories. And I would tell people all the time, because see, back then, I mean pre-September 11th, not a lot of people followed this. See, I followed terrorism for years. I would write these stories because these two books were actually written in the 90s. I actually just decided to publish them now and updated them post-September 11th, of course. People didn't think stuff like this actually happened. And they say, well, it'll be in the news and all this. But I say, no, the news don't report everything. I mean, they're seeing everything from bombings and people stealing nuclear warheads and all this other stuff. Well, when 9/11 happened, people actually started understanding, yeah, this stuff happened. Our government didn't tell us. Yeah, it just won't tell us anything. Well, for years, I've always wanted to do this type of genre. And then two, I wanted to do something to where it's like, there was no in-between. You had when people think international terrorism and spies, you think James Bond, the Superman. It's like, no, there are actually real people out here fighting these types of people. And I've just created one.
Well, you know, I think it's you're intriguing. I mean, I know that we've been networking for many years, but I got to tell you, you're very intriguing, and that's a big toll to actually pull as far as a writer. And so, go ahead.
Let me say one more thing about the Sergeant Whitehead character. Besides all that, okay. He also has a home life and a human side. He has a crazy neighbor. Who tries to date him every so often, who actually, they went on a date in the second book, but it almost got him killed. So he does have a home side. So, and, you know, and more of a human side. So I don't just make him just go out and do this and he'll just go home like nothing happened. He does, you will get to see all sides of him.
That's amazing. It really is. So from the Wise Guy Chronicles, let's talk about Garth from the heart of a virtual demon. So you get into the mind of a serial killer. I mean, your writing is so diverse. It's just intriguing to me. So how did you get into the head of a serial killer who kills women? You know, he meets them in chat rooms, and he goes, and that's very real, too. So what was your inspiration behind this one?
Well, first, let me say this is the second in the Mark Alexander investigative reporter series. He's the investigative reporter who the media liaison to the police. But as far as Garth is concerned, I wanted him to have a challenging case. Garth, I wanted to create a very unique, crazy serial killer. So I decided, you know, we got the internet because when I first wrote Garth, the internet was just getting its actual footing, and that's why the chat rooms are not Facebook or anything like that. I wanted, in this book, you're going to see two stories. You're going to see Mark's story, but you're going to also see Garth's story. And Garth, like I said, he has a thing for powerful women. I mean, judges, CEOs, business owners, he just hates them so much. So he meets them in the chat room. He also works now, I will give this part away. He works for the IRS. He works in the computer records department. So what he does is he's a detailed computer hacker, so basically what he'll do is he'll hack into your stuff. He'll hack into the IRS computer records, compare the information. That's how he finds you actually guilty.
God, man, HD. I have to tell you this. You know, for everybody who's tuned in listening today, we are talking to the riveting writer. I say after this interview, riveting. H.D. Campbell, and he's discussing his books and his life in literary. I have to tell you, H.D., you are one of the most diverse writers I've ever had on the show, and you were being nervous. I don't know what about. You are just fascinating. And so so go ahead on and keep telling us about Mark Alexander because go ahead.
I don't know. Well, what I also wanted to say, too, about Garth is he's very unique because and this is how detailed he is. After he kills his victim, he's also, like I say, he has this thing with computer viruses and all this other stuff. he goes to his victims' computers just because he'll go to the woman's house in order to kill them. He'll go to their computers and he'll introduce a virus which erases any record of him ever existing, which makes him so detailed. But Mark Alexander is an investigative reporter. My first book in Late Murder at 10, I introduced him in there. Imagine watching the 10 o'clock news and the main anchor getting shot and killed on the air.
Oh, that is heavy.
Now, what I decided to do was, I wanted an origin story for Mark Alexander. So at the time, I worked for a TV station in Arkansas. And a lot of my friends said, yeah, do a book about the station. It's like, okay, I'll do a book about it. So what I did was, Mark Alexander's backstory is he used to be an investigative reporter. But we don't explore this until later in later books. But he quit working for the paper over some child murders that didn't get resolved, because he's very big when it comes to children getting hurt. But we don't know what's going on too well. So he quit for a few years, decided to be a broadcast engineer for a TV station. At the beginning of the book, this murder happened while he's at work, you know, he's running audio. And then, you know, this masked gunman coming behind the main anchor and shooting the main anchor in the back of the head on the air.
Oh, wow.
This murder falls in his lap, so he has to call in the old, his old colleagues at the newspaper, and he's thrust back into this life. Mark is very moody but flirty. He's divorced. His marriage didn't last too long because Mark's not really, I mean, after those child murders, Mark wasn't really a fun guy to be around. I do want to say this, though, but I won't explore this for several books, but Mark is actually starting to want that cousin.
I'm sorry, he was a what? He was a what? Can you say that again?
He's actually Sergeant Wisecat's cousin. I do want to reveal that, but that won't be explored for several books, but that's just a little something for my future readers to think about.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know what I could say? You're a very intriguing writer. I could just hear the attention to detail. Now I definitely want to read your books. And what I noticed about your books, they're all about 59,000 words. So definitely something that we're going to go out and be looking into. Where can your books be purchased at, HD?
You can purchase them on my website at hdcamel3.net, or you can go to either Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and I'm also on the Kindle and the Nook, as well as your favorite bookstore. If your bookstore don't have it, request it.
Okay, that sounds good. And it's on recorded broadcast, so people could actually know who to call or who to seek out to actually get those books in their hand. And we certainly are definitely proud of you here at A Touch of Grace for being a positive African-American man out there in the entrepreneurial road and actually doing it for yourself. So as we wind down, I love to ask this question of guests. Let's board the time machine and go back to 7-year-old H.D. Campbell. What message would you give him, and why?
I would say believe in yourself more. Don't allow those attitudes, don't allow people's negativity to envelop you. Always follow your dreams and pursue your dreams, because it's one thing to have dreams, it's another thing to pursue those things. And again, I mean, this can't be repeated more. Don't stop following your path.
And say that one more time. Don't stop following
the path.
The path. Okay. All right. Very positive. So, listeners, today we had an interesting discussion with the author of several different genres of writing, from romance to espionage to other sorts of now what's the word that I'm looking for? He's just diverse. That's all I could say. I mean, I have had authors on this show who have discussed their book, but never to the detail to help me get it, you know, because my get it factor is sometimes a little slow. But I think that you are an extraordinary gift to the realm of literary. And so I would like to say thank you so much for being on the show. And are there any final thoughts that you would like to leave listeners with today, Mr. Campbell?
Well, I would just pretty much so just like to say that I love talking to writers, I love influencing writers, I love being a part of the literary genre. But if I could say one thing, and the best advice I can give you to everyone is we have to stay focused on not competing with one another, because we're all in this together, and there's enough room at the top for everybody. Now, I'm a big stickler for people for competition. I hate it, but go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. You were doing just fine. Go ahead. You were a stickler for a confrontation.
I'm a stickler for as far as us working together. I definitely don't like competition. Tisha Green, who's a very good friend of mine, we've been talking about this since we first met, to where each one teach one. If you're at a certain level and you have a chance to bring a new writer up, bring them up. If there's an author that needs your help, help that off. I mean, it's not going to hurt you any. It's not going to hurt your book sales. It's not going to hurt their book sales. If anything, it helps you both, and it's a good blessing. That's what it's all about, blessing.
I agree. And while we're still on the air, I don't want to forget this plug for your YouTube show. So what is the name of your show, and how can we tune in?
The name of the show is The Office Corner with H.D. Campbell. You can watch it on my website at www.hdcampbell3.net or my YouTube channel at H.D. Campbell 1230. It's a show where I interview three authors about their books. And it's a YouTube show, so you'll be able to see me out, sometimes be on location. A lot of times my interviews will either be in person through Skype or through speakerphone through a slideshow. And you can see it every 2 weeks. In fact, I have a new show coming this Friday.
All right, that's fantastic. And Attention Grace definitely will support that effort. So I just want to once again say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule and for joining us today. And everyone listening, I would just like to say thank you for making A Touch of Grace 30,000 strong, approaching 40,000 people, and for giving our great guest, our gifted guest, the opportunity to talk about their extraordinary lives in entertainment, in literary, poetry, and the list goes on. So with that in mind, I just want to say thank you on behalf of A Touch of Grace for tuning in. And HD, did you have one more thing you wanted to say?
I just want to thank you for having me on. I mean, it's an honor. I don't do a lot of interviews because I get so nervous, but you actually, I relaxed and everything was good. Hope I didn't talk you to death, so I apologize. I did.
Well, you were supposed to talk us to death. That was the main reason why you were on here, so you did fabulous, okay?
So thank you so much. I really
You're welcome.
It.
You're welcome, and God bless. All right, everybody, it is a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. And later on in the week, we're going to have some pretty exciting shows. The premiere of Kings with Randy Rand and author Michael Givens and myself will premiere on Friday at 1:30. So catch that episode. It's going to be another inspiring one. And on that, know that you are somebody. Live like you are somebody, and then you'll be somebody. Take care.